Hello and welcome to the latest podcast from the German Institute for International and Security Affairs, or SWP for short, here in Berlin. In this podcast, we discuss what's on the minds of policymakers, or at the very least, what should be on their minds. Today, we're turning our attention to Turkey, where voters head to the polls for the presidential and parliamentary elections on the 14th of May. After two decades at the top, first as prime minister, then as president, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is running for re-election. While in power as president, Erdogan has increasingly styled himself as an autocrat, tightening his grip on the media and judiciary. But with crippling inflation and a backlash over how his government responded to the earthquakes that devastated southeastern Turkey in February, Erdogan's challengers, who have formed an alliance, see a real chance of ousting him from office. So today we will be taking a closer look at the candidates and their campaigns, the polls and what they say about the prospect of political change, and we'll ask how the results could impact relations between Turkey and the EU. I'm Esme Nicholson, and to answer these questions, I'm joined today by two experts in Turkish politics. My first guest is Dr. Hürjan Özlü Aksoy from the Center of Applied Turkey Studies, or CATS, here at the German Institute for International and Security Affairs. Özlü, thank you for being here today. Welcome.
Thank you, Esme.
My second guest is Dr. Salim Çevik, also based at SWP's Center for Applied Turkey Studies. Salim, thank you for taking the time to be with us here today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the candidates, one of whom is, of course, very familiar, but there are four people competing for the top job. Özlü, perhaps you could start us off by telling us who they are and which parties and alliances they represent.
So thank you, Esme. The first candidate is the very well-known Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president, and he is the candidate of the People's Alliance. And he's the beating heart of Turkish politics today, actually. He started his career as Istanbul mayor and then continued as a prime minister, and he's acting as the president since 2014. His Justice and Development Party, AKP with Turkish initials, is in the alliance called People's Alliance together with the Ultranationalist Nationalist Movement Party and another one, the Big Union Party, and with an ultra-religious conservative New Welfare Party. And there is the fifth party that is supporting this alliance called Hudapar. It's an Islamist Kurdish party, which is affiliated with the Hezbollah. And they are not within the alliance, but they are supporting Erdogan's candidacy. The second candidate is Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, and he competes in May's presidential elections representing a six-party coalition called the Nation Alliance. And this alliance consists of his center-left Republican People's Party. This is the main opposition party, the center-right Nationalist Good Party, and two other religious conservative parties, Felicity Party, Future Party, and Democracy and Progress Party, and six, the central-right Democrat Party. So it's known as Table of Six, and he's the candidate. And Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu's candidacy is being also supported by the Labour and Freedom Alliance. And this is the third alliance, and this is consisting of the pro-Kurdish HDP and other leftist parties. The third candidate is Muharrem İnce. He used to be a member of the Republican People's Party and ran against Erdogan in 2018 elections, but he moved on and established his own party, Homeland Party. He's the third candidate. The final candidate's name is Sinan Ogan. He's the youngest, 56 years old, and he's supported by the alliance called Ancestral Alliance. As you can imagine, understand from the name, it's a small alliance consisting of ultra-nationalist parties under this umbrella. And actually, as you see, we have four candidates, male candidates, no female candidates.
Salim, perhaps I can bring you in here and perhaps I can ask you to talk more about the alliance of six parties that have come together to challenge Erdogan. It's a fairly disparate group, as I understand it.
Yes, actually, the emergence of alliances is quite a novelty in Turkish politics. Unlike in Germany, we don't have a history of political alliances. It is, in a way, an unintended consequence of the presidential system. Turkey switched to the presidential system in 2017, and since then we started to observe emergence of party alliances because the presidential system dictates that you need to reach 51% and no one can reach it alone. The table of six, the major running opposition alliances, you mentioned is a very eclectic alliance. It is composed of parties with very different political views, and they are mostly united by their desire to topple down Erdogan. In contrast, Erdogan's alliance is much more organic in the sense that it is composed of parties with very similar political views.
And what are the main issues in these elections? I mean, with chronic high inflation, I assume economy is dominating debate. But what about the earthquakes and their aftermath, Özlem?
I mean, as you mentioned, Erdogan has promised economic prospects, and he said last week in Ankara he promises bring inflation back to single digits, which lies around more than 50% right now. 5 months ago, it was above 85%, and he wants to boost the economic growth. And in the party manifesto, it stated that improving the investment further with a structure based on a free market economy integrated with the world. You see that he's really underlining that economic prospects are very important. And there is also promises on foreign policy arena. And Erdogan said the AKP would continue to normalize relations with the neighboring countries and all the other regional actors. And he aims to build an axis of Turkey, probably meaning a group of countries looking at Turkey as the central regional power. But at the same time, Erdogan also uses very polarizing campaign, and he instrumentalizes identity politics, actually. And he also promised a reconstruction of the devastated regions after the earthquake as soon as possible. And the government has promised to deliver houses in smaller cities within 3 months. Of course, the question remains if those new buildings are safe. But this is one of his promises. In contrast, the opposition focuses on substantial issues such as, economy as well, and good governance, justice, and fighting corruption. In February 2023, the oppositional National Alliance has issued a joint declaration, and they promised there not only the economic prospects or prosperity, but also returning back to strengthen parliamentary system, which means abolishing the hyper-presidential system, so-called one-man rule, and establish a new parliamentary model that would be more effective in governance. And that, of course, needs guarantees like the fundamental rights and freedoms, reinstatement of the legislative power of the parliament, and strengthening the system of checks and balances. So, and the opposition underlines it's highly vital to return to the economic orthodoxy because President Erdogan is pursuing an unorthodox economic policies, which are unusual economic policies, and that of course necessitates the independence of the central bank and defeat the soaring inflation. So the number one issue is economic improvement in the aftermath of the devastating earthquake, but also good governance and fighting corruption. And the one last thing about the foreign policy, the oppositional alliance says that they will only pursue diplomatic and multilateral talks instead of being very active or aggressive in foreign policy arena.
So lots of election promises from everybody. Salim, to what extent are these elections a kind of referendum on Erdogan himself? And is he losing public trust?
The election is mostly about a referendum on Erdogan. The main issue in this election is that whether Turkey will continue with Erdogan's rule that is now two decades long, or it will turn a new page or not. In that sense, Erdogan is the central figure in these elections. But his ability to shape the discourse is very much limited compared to the past. His positive agenda, the Asli introduced many of his promises. He keeps going on giving promises, but there's a problem. He has unlimited powers since last 5 years since Turkey switched to the presidential system. So if you are ruling a country with unlimited powers and you still keep on giving promises for the future, there is a problem of credibility, because if you can really lower the inflation, why not do it now? Or if you can deliver something, why not deliver it now? So his positive promises, his positive agenda has a problem of credibility. In order to overcome this, he creates, as Aslı mentioned, he goes on dividing tactics and tries to polarize the society. It also helps to divide the opposition, because as I mentioned earlier, opposition is basically united about their desire to topple Erdogan. So Erdogan is in a way trying to undermine their cohesion. In contrast, the opposition's main strategy is to depolarize the society and to create, they promise to create a society that would be more reconciled within itself. They promise a reconciliation between various conflicting groups inside the society. That's their strategy to undermine Erdogan's polarizing tactics, basically.
Well, and Asli, perhaps you can tell me about the anti-Erdogan figure, his main challenger, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu. He's a retired civil servant, and he seems an altogether quieter figure than Erdogan. What is his appeal to voters, other than the fact that he is not Erdogan?
This is exactly his appeal, being not Erdogan. I mean, there is a feeling of being fed up in the society, in the whole society. So Erdogan has indeed a fiery and charismatic nature, and Kılıçdaroğlu does not have. But as I mentioned earlier, and Salim also underlined, I mean, Erdogan employs a polarizing rhetoric. He can create controversy and division, and his aim has been always to drive a wedge between the national lines. But Kılıçdaroğlu represents the exact opposite. Kılıçdaroğlu has called for reconciliation, which is called in Turkish helalleşme, and this is very, very important word, actually, in the Turkish context, and it describes the forgiveness and reconciliation needed to heal Turkey's wounds, wrongs, and current divides. And it's paying off, actually. If we look at his campaign videos, he tries to embrace every citizen from different political, ethnic, and religious backgrounds. He has been doing these short videos in Twitter. And he has managed to unite his secularist party, like staunchly secularist party, with the religious conservative parties in the alliance, as we have seen, and in this table of six. And Kılıçdaroğlu wants to overcome social divisions and steer the debate away from this religious cultural identity issues, these fault lines, and he underlines our greatest goal is to bring prosperity, peace, and joy to Turkey. And as you can see from those words, prosperity, peace, and joy, the opposition and Kılıçdaroğlu really plays to the audience that if they come to power, there will be more joyous Turkey.
But I would also say it's not only that he is not Erdogan, but he's also anti-Erdogan. All his pros and cons is the quite opposite of Erdogan. Certainly he's not a charismatic figure. He's not a good orator. But he's not a shrewd politician in the sense of Erdogan. But he is well-educated. He is calm, as Aslı mentioned. He is not corrupt. And he's a very moderate, compromising figure. It's in all ways, all his positive and negative aspects is in a way polar opposite of Erdogan.
Bearing in mind all the usual caveats about polls, what do the latest polls say? And should Erdogan be worried, Salim?
Well, the polls says that it's a tight race. In most reliable polls, Kılıçdaroğlu is heading by a very small margin, 1 or 2 points at most. So it will be a tight race. I think at the end of the day, the decisive factor would be who will manage to mobilize his base to the ballot box. Because most polls since last year shows that around 55% of the society will never vote for Erdogan. But it doesn't mean that they will vote for Kılıçdaroğlu. At the end of the day, we will see if Kılıçdaroğlu will manage to mobilize this 55% coming from very different political views and manage to convince them to vote for himself. And on the other side, Erdogan's base, although is much more coherent, There are certain uneasiness with the way Erdogan is ruling the country, even within his own base. But their uneasiness, well, would this reach to the level of not going to vote at all or not? We will see this.
And Özlem, even if the opposition alliance succeeds in unseating Erdogan as president, what are its prospects in parliament? Are the six parties too far apart politically to either gain a majority or even work effectively together? And does it really matter?
As we have been talking about it, they are very politically far away from each other. But they have issued a joint declaration I mentioned in February 2023, and it's kind of a coalition agreement, actually. So they have their signature, all the party leaders have their signature under this coalition agreement, and they promise to govern effectively.
I think what matters in this case, we have to distinguish between the presidency and the parliament. There will be only one winner in the presidency, obviously, for as the system dictates. But when it comes to parliamentary majority, it is possible and highly likely that no alliance can reach the majority because there are three alliances competing. It is highly likely that we will have a very fractured parliament. But how much does this matter for the next president? Because the system gives the president almost unlimited powers. So the forthcoming president, either Kılıçdaroğlu or Erdogan, can actually manage to rule at least for a while without relying on a parliamentary majority.
So with the real possibility that Erdogan might be toppled in these elections, is there any concern about election fraud, Salim?
Yes, there are. I mean, when we talk about election fraud, when we talk about Turkey's elections, the usual agreement is that Turkish elections are not fair, certainly, but they are free. When we say they are not fair, I'm referring to the process leading to the election itself. In the way up to the election, the government has extreme advantages. It controls the entire media. Freedom of speech is curtailed. Even freedom of organization, holding mass rallies, these are all limited for the opposition. The government uses the entire state capacity in its campaigning. So the playing field is not even, and it's highly on the advantage of the government. That's number one. But whether if it would be free, whether the elections would be rigged, if we are talking about that, It's highly unlikely because the system is very well established, and if the opposition manages to follow its duties closely, and that is basically manages to put an observer for every ballot box, it is almost impossible to rig the elections and steal the votes. So in that sense, there it would be probably a free election.
Leslie.
Yeah, I mean, international observers have already documented electoral irregularities in the previous elections. But like Salim said, the observation has been done by the civil society, so engaged civil society, which is important, and they are trying to be bipartisan. They're just observing. And we have also international observers. But this is not only the only way to rig the elections. There can be also rejection to the outcomes of the elections, which already happened in 2019 Istanbul mayoral elections. I think as a big fraud is not possible. On the top of it, I would like to add also, I mean, Turkey cannot risk, or the government cannot risk to rig the elections right now, because Turkey does not have any natural resources like in Russia or Venezuela. So the government needs investment. And to do something like this will probably further exclude Turkey from the Western markets, because the rigged elections will necessarily be rejected and not respected in the West.
Özlem, you're actually bringing us to foreign policy. But before we address that, one other question about the security of the elections. There are about 1 million people in Turkey currently displaced by the earthquakes and homeless. To what extent will the earthquakes have an impact on the election? Will they be able to vote?
I mean, the government has issued a kind of a regulation that those people who had to move to other places, mostly to the western parts of the country, they can register themselves in the hotels, hostels, dormitories or whatever, and they can vote there. But the problem is, of course, are they going to be listed twice? Who is going to control if someone, although he or she is registered in the western part where they moved on, go back and votes in the original city? So we don't know how many people will move in the places where they are registered now or back to their original cities. So the government tried to make sure that they can also vote, but there is also concerns about that.
Well, finally, I'd like to ask how the election results might impact Ankara's relations with Brussels, Berlin and beyond. Asli, perhaps you could take us through the scenario of Erdogan winning. And then Salim, perhaps you could tell us what a Kılıçdaroğlu win would mean for foreign policy.
So my part is the easy part, because then the play will continue. We will see a continuation of the current rapprochement with the regional actors. Turkey already started, or Ankara already started normalization efforts with all the countries, Israel, Egypt, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and even with Greece after the earthquake. And they are trying to have a dialogue also with the Syrian government. That means that the Turkish government and Erdogan wants to get rid of this conflictual years behind them. And I suppose they will continue on this path. And there is no money for re-escalating the conflicts. And if we look at EU-Turkey or Germany-Turkey relations, probably it won't be different than now. The similar rhetoric will continue. The similar rhetoric, what I mean is, now he has more reconciliator tone towards Europe, and especially after the earthquake relief funds and everything. And what they underline is they want to go back to the accession process into the EU, but they will probably push for coming to the table on two issues. One is the visa liberalization for the Turkish citizens to Europe. The other one is modernization of customs union. So pretty much the same approach with a rather quieter rhetoric.
And well, and before we go on to the other scenario, what about the view from Berlin, Brussels, Washington? Erdogan is a known entity. Would it simply be convenient for the norm to continue?
This is a tricky question, but we have two answers. I think what we have observed in Europe was wait and see approach, and I think member states of the European Union or groups within those member states who think that it will be easier to continue with Erdogan because this is one person, not a coalition of different politics. That means that we can still negotiate on EU-Turkey deal on migration, and we know how he functions. But there are also certain groups, they want to have more democracy and rule of law and predictability. So, and Erdogan is not a predictable political figure. So we have two groups of politicians, I would say, or member states they are looking at Erdogan's re-election or dethroning.
Thank you. And Salim, if the opposition alliance manages to topple Erdogan, what would that mean for foreign policy?
Well, it would have different implications. First, let's look at the style of foreign policy making. Current foreign policy making in Turkey is extremely personalized, and as Aslı also mentioned, it leads to unpredictability. It's a kind of very erratic foreign policy. In that sense, if Kılıçdaroğlu comes, we would see a more stable and more predictable country. Probably Minister of Foreign Affairs will play a more crucial role in the conduct of foreign policy compared to today. So there would be a stylistic change, but that doesn't necessarily mean that relations with the West would be smoother, but it would be calmer, at least. I mean, there would be tensions, there would be problems, but they will, the rhetoric around these problems would be much calmer than today. But as I agree with Aslı that even if Erdogan continues, we will not see the aggressive style that we are in a way used to in the last years due to the economic problems of the country. But when it comes to the substance, I think all three options are possible. There would be better relations in certain areas, same status quo will continue, and in certain areas there would be new tensions. There will be improvements in Turkish-Western relations and Turkish-EU relations in the sense that under Kılıçdaroğlu, Turkey will have a clearer idea of how it sees itself in the global rivalry. Turkey will admit to its role as part of the Western alliance more confidently. And there would be, for instance, the veto over Swedish accession will be removed very quickly, I would say. The accession to EU will be, although it is not realistic, it would come back to the table and there would be improvements in those regards. But tensions will continue on issues like American presence in Syria, because the current alliance is also very nationalist. The tensions will continue vis-a-vis Greece and Cyprus on Eastern Mediterranean and on the delimitation of waters in the Aegean Sea. So those tensions will continue pretty much the same way. And there might be new problems coming through migration issue because Kılıçdaroğlu has vowed to repeal the migration deal between EU and Turkey. And this is a very popular promise in the Turkish public because Turkey hosts the largest refugee community in the world and the society sees this as Turkey acting as a storage house for Europe in terms of the refugees and the deal is not popular at all and therefore Kılıçdaroğlu promised to annul the deal and we might see new crisis around this migration deal. Therefore, as Aslı said, within certain sectors of the West, there is a feeling that Erdogan is better the devil you know, rather than take the risks of an unpredicted person.
Well, that's all we have time for on the podcast this week. I'd like to thank our guests, Salim Cevik and Hürjan Özli Aksoy. You can find links to their latest publications in the show notes, as well as at www.cats-network.eu/publications and at www.swp-berlin.org. And if you like what you hear, you can subscribe to the SWP podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So until next time, it's goodbye from my guests.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you and goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, Esme Nicholson. Thank you for tuning in.